This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. How Sound is a production of the Public Radio Exchange and Transom.org. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Support for How Sound comes from Columbia University's Oral History Master of Arts program. It's the first of its kind in the United States. They offer a one-year interdisciplinary master's degree where students learn how to record, analyze, and share first-person stories. Grads of the program work in museums, historical societies, advocacy, media, arts, research, and education. You can learn more about their program at Oral History. That's one word, oralhistory.columbia.edu. When Sally Helm was a student at the Transom Story Workshop in the fall of 2015, one thing she hoped to learn was how to challenge people in an interview.
Being like a journalist about it, trying to ask them to clarify and catch them if they say something that is, you know, misleading and stuff like that.
But Sally worried about asking hard questions, pushing back. She was relieved, though, when Al Letson Skyped into class to talk about interviewing. Al's the host of Reveal, an investigative reporting show from PRX. Al said challenging people isn't about gotcha.
Which was really comforting for me to hear, because you're just looking to have your response in the moment and let them respond to that and try to get the full picture of who someone is. And if they say something that makes you go, wait a second, follow up, partly to give them a chance to not sound crazy.
Sally had a chance to do just that while reporting her first story, but didn't.
Romolo Del Dio is standing on the edge of McMillan Wharf in Provincetown, looking at a boat that no one else can see.
You can imagine this boat in the air.
Romolo's a professional bronze sculptor, and he's picturing the Provincetown Fisherman's Memorial.
He knows the interview exactly itself, what it, should it look like. Was...
two fishermen, life-sized.
I'm not going to say I got bulldozed, but he talked a lot more than I talked. He's a super eloquent guy. He has a strong point of view, and he was just telling me his point of view. And I think when I was listening back to the tape of that interview, there were a bunch of moments where I was like, whoa, that sounds a little crazy. And the crazy in this case was he just made really big claims about how qualified he was to make the sculpture and sort of how he was the only person who was qualified to make the sculpture. And I wished when I was listening back to the tape that I had responded to that in the moment, that I had even thought to respond to that in the moment. You know, I would hear him say something and I would be like, oh, that's probably true, instead of just assessing it and, you know, doing a gut check with myself. Is that true? Do I have a question about that?
Sally calls this kind of questioning skeptical brain. And by not using her skeptical brain and letting Romolo lead the conversation, she says her interview went too long and down too many rabbit holes. Unfortunately, Sally didn't use her skeptical brain during the initial interviews for her second story at Transom, a story about Martha's Vineyard voting to secede from Massachusetts in 1977. After Sally recorded her first interview with John Alley, one of the secession leaders, she returned to class dismayed. The interview was dull, she thought, uninteresting. A lot of tape of John talking wistfully about aging and growing up on the island. Very little about secession. Sally wondered why. Why is this happening? I don't think it's the interviewee's fault, she thought. I must be not doing something right. Where's my skeptical brain? Why am I not leading? Well, part of her answer is this. It's her first time recording interviews, and she was hyper-focused on the sound quality. And Sally also worried that if she pushed back, her interviewees might put up walls, not want to answer questions. Lastly, Sally had this thought, one she's still pondering.
I wonder if some of this, like, being worried about being too polite, like, I wonder if that affects female reporters more than male reporters. And I'm sure it affects everybody, but I wonder if that's one of the things at play here. And I think that just thinking about that emboldened me partly to do something different.
So with this idea in mind, as well as a pep talk from another visitor to class, Robert Smith of Planet Money, Sally interviewed John the secessionist a second time, but with a new resolve: take control, lead, stay focused on the story, and don't stray too far. She says that approach was infinitely better.
I was way more present in the interview than I had been for the Romolo interview. And it was just like, I could totally feel the difference.
What do you mean present?
I was talking a lot more. I was cutting him off, which I think I had thought that maybe I shouldn't do, that maybe, you know, if I cut him off, what if I miss the amazing thing that he's going to say at the end of the sentence, or he, you know, like, this is, maybe this is where the story is at the end of this sentence. But I was, in the John Alley interview, I was more like, no, I know where the story is. He's going off topic with this thing, or I'm going to tell us where the conversation should go. So I would jump in the middle of his sentence. He would say something, and I'd be like, really? But what about this?
Was your skeptical brain on more for the Martha's Vineyard story?
Yes, it definitely was. Even for little things. I'm trying to think of an example. One that made it into the story was when Everett Poole, in the second interview, Everett Poole was one of the other secession guys. He says, Yankees are not over demonstrative. That's what he said. And that was the moment in the interview when I was like, oh, I do have my skeptical brain on, because he said that very near the beginning. And I was already like, wait a minute, are Yankees not over demonstrative?
Everett says the selectmen argued for a long time about how they could respond to losing their representative. Then he stood up and said, if we don't get our own representation, we should secede from the state. He wasn't joking.
Yankees are not over demonstrative, you know.
Well, except for the occasional secession flare-up that they get.
Well, that wasn't being over dramatic at all. That was just nuts and bolts. We are ourselves, and we should be represented as such.
You sounded playful, too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was having way more fun once I sort of realized that I needed, that I could be jumping in this way. And I was being more myself, you know, I was letting myself be myself.
After having such a positive experience with this different approach to interviewing, Sally thought back to her interview with Romolo, the sculptor. She now feels she had little to worry about pushing back and guiding the interview more strongly.
I bet what would have happened is he would have, you know, respected me more, and probably he would have gone there with me. Maybe his answers would have been a little more challenging or argumentatively phrased, but that actually would have been great for the story.
Here's Sally's story about the secession movement on Martha's Vineyard. It's called We Could Take No More.
Before we get into the whole secession thing, we need to say a few words about people from Martha's Vineyard.
Martha's Vineyards have their own style.
I see strong people.
Completely independent.
Tough bunch, very tough. My grandfather couldn't complete a sentence without cussing.
Vineyarders aren't the type to take an insult sitting down. And in 1977, the state of Massachusetts lobbed a big insult their way. Martha's Vineyard had always had its own state legislator. But now, there was this redistricting bill on the table, and Massachusetts said they were too small for that, so they had to share a representative. Too small? Martha's Vineyard said. Too small? Oh no. No way.
'Twas the big freeze of 77. A group got together, numbering about 11. The farmers, the fishermen, selectmen too, islanders all to decide what to do.
It was a rainy, cold night.
The meeting happened to be held in the Chilmark Community Center.
It was a cold February night up in Chilmark, where it all began.
We all talked about the few mundane issues that we had, and then secession.
Everett Poole was the guy who first brought it up.
I wanted to wind the damn meeting up so I could go home.
Everett says the selectmen argued for a long time about how they could respond to losing their representative. Then he stood up and said, if we don't get our own representation, we should secede from the state. He wasn't joking.
Yankees are not over demonstrative, you know.
Well, except for the occasional secession flare-up that they get.
Well, that wasn't being over dramatic at all. That was just nuts and bolts. We are ourselves, and we should be represented as such.
Us younger zealots thought this was the avenue.
That's John Alley. He was one of the youngest selectmen at the meeting.
Older people, I've gotten to be older now, sense that let's not upset the apple cart.
John's 73 now, but when he left that meeting, he was ready to tip over a million apple carts if he had to. He sent word to the press. The All-Island Selectmen's Association had voted to leave the state and start their own.
A rallying cry was heard the aisle through. It's time to secede from you know who.
In retrospect, goddamn, we've unraveled a can of worms here. Well, we didn't know that then. I named a ruling junta. Joe Salito, he was then the head of the Selectmen's Association, so he became the head of the ruling junta.
At the time, Joe was the clerk of the county court.
We talked about establishing a Supreme Court, and I said if they did that, then I'd like to be the Chief Justice.
Joe voted for secession that night in Chilmark. The next morning, he woke up and went about his normal business.
I was at work here, and I started getting telephone calls from radio stations. And they started asking me questions about it, and from there it took off.
The Boston Globe picked up the story. Then it was on the NBC Nightly News. And at town meetings across the vineyard, there were landslide votes in support of secession. In Edgartown, it was 213 to 33. Only 33 people voted against it. Meanwhile, at the State House in Boston, the vineyard's representative lobbied hard to defeat the redistricting bill. He was quoted in the Vineyard Gazette comparing the secession movement to the American Revolution. Back on the island, John Alley remembers being in his general store when the phone rang.
This man told me he was the governor of Vermont, and I said, yes, and I'm the king of England, and I hung up.
The governor called back and said, no, no, it's really me. I want to annex the vineyard. Vermont relies on winter tourism, so the governor wanted a seashore to balance things out. Then Hawaii sent its welcome, and Connecticut, and New Hampshire. Joe got a proclamation of support from Tennessee.
And whereas a band of rebellious islanders is preparing for independence to extent that a new flag has been designed, proposals for gambling casinos are circulated, and applications for ambassadorial posts have been submitted. And whereas...
Tennessee wasn't joking. Someone had designed a new state flag, a seagull flying across an orange sun. And, of course, there was the state anthem.
Onward, steadfast for the right, keep your vigil through the night. From East Shoplite to Menemshabite, keep our little island tight.
It perhaps was overstated, but we had a legitimate reason for secession. That seemed to be the only channel in which you could be heard by the state officials in charge of all this.
It couldn't have been the only channel, right? There could have been like a write a letter, but why didn't you want to do
We've all written. Don't get this wrong. Letters were written, official letters with a stamp and all that. It didn't amount to hill of beans.
In the end, even the secession movement couldn't stop the bill that was going to strip the vineyard of their representative. Despite all the votes and the lobbying, the redistricting bill passed the legislature in May. The governor signed it, and the hopes for a vineyard representative were pretty much over. They did get something. The legislature agreed to give the vineyard a legislative liaison, who would sort of be their voice in Boston, but without an actual vote. And the vineyard's reaction was, okay. A lot of people were losing interest in the whole thing anyway. Plus, summer was coming.
It just slowly died away and we got back into doing our regular things that we usually did.
But you could have been Chief Justice of the court.
I'm happy with the job that I have.
You wouldn't have wanted to be governor?
It would have been fun to do something like that. But in reality, it's really a lot of headaches.
Do you think if secession came up now, how would you react?
I'd probably, number one, be against it. But number two, because I know how complicated and the process and the steps you have to go through.
So you'd be against it now?
Well, you know, I'm older now. And hell, I've been around a while. And we were beginning to learn that the long road really went on and on and on and on. So what do? You cut your losses and you get on with things.
Everett Poole, the guy who first proposed secession, says he's done with political kerfuffles.
I'm over the hill. I'm fast going down the other side, and it's younger people are going to make the decisions now, not me, not anybody my age.
John agrees.
Ultimately, we achieved pretty much all of our goal, and stepped aside. And God bless the young bucks.
A few weeks back, I brought the Martha's Vineyard state anthem to Stupid Fun Karaoke Night, which happens every week at a bar in Oak Bluffs. I wanted to know how the young bucks today feel about secession. They were pretty practical. It would be hard to reorganize everything, and where would they get the money? But here and there, the idea of secession found some support.
I kind of do wish that we had our own little, right?
Yeah.
No one else was allowed.
You do?
I guess it would be pretty cool now that I'm thinking about it.
If any part of Massachusetts should be independent, it should be this place.
Secession's the answer. We could take no more.
Secession, the answer. We could take no more.
Take no more.
Take no more. Take no more.
John and Joe have just one thing to say to anyone who would think about secession.
Good luck.
Good luck.
I will take no more.
On Martha's Vineyard, I'm Sally Helm.
Sally recalls more of what she learned about interviewing at the post for this House Sound episode at transom.org. In particular, she remembers an evening discussion about interviewing with Robert Smith, Jay Allison, and her class, and the hunter versus farmer interviewing methods. What do I mean by that? Visit Transom to find out. Sally's story about Martha's Vineyard is one of many produced by students at the last Transom workshop on Cape Cod. Pretty soon, Transom will devote an episode of the Transom podcast to all the pieces featured at the most recent class's graduation/listening event. You can find the Transom podcast at iTunes or wherever. And while you're there, subscribe to PRX's podcast, Orbital Path. PRX just launched the show. It's about our place in the cosmos. Orbital Path. Take a listen. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. Thanks to my script editor, John Barth, and to WCAI in Woods Hole, where I record my narration. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.